Hi, I'm Larry Reese. I play Mike Cole in Haunting Melissa and Haunting Melissa 2. And you are hearing and listening and watching us on A Dark Companion.
Got another special guest for everybody out there, someone from the cast. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you doing? So we have Larry Reese.
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, not a problem. Yeah, man, Larry played Mike Cole on Haunting Melissa and in Dark Hearts. A kind of complex character. I don't want to say a villain, but somebody who's got some interests in mind.
Yeah, sure does. Mike presented all kinds of challenges too, because I'm not really all that familiar with the dark side of life, so to speak. I usually get cast as doctors or lawyers or priests.
Yeah, the jolly priest, I think, in Brokeback Mountain.
That's right, with Heath Ledger and Michelle Williams. That was a lot of fun. And that's more typical, the kind of stuff I get to do. So when I got the opportunity to audition for Haunting Melissa, I was really, really excited. And I was very nervous, too.
Sure.
And then when I got on the set, and Neil, I mean, at the audition, and Neil was there, he was smiling. He was like, he was really happy. And I was thinking, wait a minute, I'm after this really dark, evil guy. And Neil just made me feel like totally relaxed, right? And so one of the challenges of playing a character like Mike Cole is you got to use your imagination and you got to go into that dark aspect of yourself, right?
Sure, yeah.
And you can't do it unless you are comfortable.
Right.
And unless you feel that you are in a position where you can be vulnerable. And Neil set that up right away.
Yeah, it seems like the general consensus from talking to everybody involved with the movie is that Neil is pretty amazing.
Yeah, he is amazing. Yeah.
What was the audition like? Were you reading something that actually ended up being in the film, or, you know, how did you go about that?
Well, actually, the audition was a scene from Haunting Melissa.
Okay.
Where I go to Melissa's house, and her father's gone, and we have a confrontation. And I don't want to do spoiler alert or give something away to anybody that hasn't seen it. But and there was a reader there, and then I asked, because there's some physical contact, could I physically contact the person? And they said yes. So we went at it first time through, and right in the middle of the audition, right in the middle, I kid you not, I blanked. And I was just staring at her, at the reader at the audition. And I guess the stare was pretty intense.
Yeah.
So, then it hit me, and I finished off the scene. And I thought, oh boy, I've blown it now. You know, I'll just crawl under a rock and hide. And as soon as I get out of here, I'll feel better about it. And then Neil said, yeah, he got him. Yeah, yeah, that intensity was, that's what I'm looking for, man. And he said, would you want to do it again? And I said, oh, please, do you mind? And he said, do I mind? Like, so he was so encouraging, even though I was feeling about, 2 inches tall and, I didn't get it. So we did it again. And he just encouraged me to go with that intensity. And I did. And I just kind of lost myself. I can't really tell you what happened. I just kind of lost myself in that intensity. And then it was over, and Neil said, "Yeah, that was really good. Thank you." And, you know, we shake hands and I leave. And then I didn't hear back for a while. And then I hear that, yeah, they want you for Mike Cole. And I thought, okay, all right. Here's another thing, Gerald, too.
Sure.
I live in Sylvan Lake, Alberta, and it's a 2-hour drive to Edmonton or a 2-hour drive to Calgary. And usually when I go for auditions, I do the 2-hour drive. I got an audition, maybe last 3 to 5 minutes, and I have a 2-hour drive back. And then, you know, for every part an actor gets, usually you're auditioning 3, 5, 10 times, right? So it gets kind of time-consuming.
Sure.
And in the audition for Neil, I thought, okay, well, that's it. I had a couple times, and he asked me to just do it one more time. And at the end, he was smiling, but I thought, no, I didn't get this thing. I didn't get this thing. And then, sure enough, and to be honest with you, I was really surprised. And yet when I showed up on the set, he was just like, man, you nailed it from the start. And I didn't want to say, yeah, but I blanked because maybe
pick up on that.
Notice, you know?
Yeah.
And so that really set the tone right off the bat.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, that scene, I think you're talking about the one where it's Mike and Melissa in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty intense scene, and it definitely solidified any creepy feelings we were having about who Mike Cole is. Because he was kind of watching her and, you know, calling and stuff like that, but actually to show up there and really kind of get in her face about it, and it definitely made us all wonder, like, what is his motivation? And,
yeah.
You know, what does he know? How does he factor into everything that's going on? Especially of his connection with her father.
And, yeah, with Jack, who actually is played by Greg Lawson. Mm-hmm. And Greg and I have known each other, I don't know, 25, 30 years. So we're really good friends.
Okay, wow.
And so that's another thing that's exciting about working in this area of the country is that you get to see these other actors on and off and get a relationship. And with Greg, sometimes we've been up for the same role, but, you know, very supportive. And he's a powerhouse actor. And I don't know if you saw Klondike.
I've not.
Oh, that was one we were both in. I had a scene with Tim Roth and Abby Cornish from Seven Psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
And I get blown away. I get killed. So it's a great scene. It's a lot of fun. But Greg Lawson, who plays Jack, had a pivotal role in Klondike. And, the executive producer was Ridley Scott. So, I mean, this is big stuff. And Richard Madden was in it from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And so Greg had a great role. And the whole plot, it was a 6-hour miniseries kind of thing, all revolved around Greg. And when I watched it, I kept saying, go, Greg, go, because he was totally different than he normally is. And that's a sign of a good actor. I think that can do that transformation. And Greg nailed it. He was just incredible. And so whenever we work together, we're always supportive of each other and we trade stories back and forth. And so I really was excited about his being cast in Haunting Melissa, too. Yeah,
that's something that's come up quite a bit. On the show is the community that seems to be going on up there, and you were in Brokeback Mountain, so was Tom Carey. You know, this connection. The fact that Greg and Barb Mitchell both played Cassia's parents in Mary In-Laws just before Haunting Melissa, and her parents again is pretty cool.
Yeah,
how close knit that is.
Oh, he's another great guy. You know, and in the first one. He plays Officer Roy.
Right.
And then when we found out that, you know, that part got expanded, we were just jumping up and down and excited. Yeah, way to go, way to go. Right. Yeah, and that's another thing in the second part. And again, I don't want to do any
Any spoilers you let out, I could put a little spoiler alert on the description. Okay. Just say whatever you want.
So when he puts on all the Dark Man makeup and everything, he is one scary, scary dude. And in the scene where I'm in the hospital, in the bed, I'm all bandaged up, and at the end he comes in. I didn't need any motivation. Just looking at him was literally, I kid you not, it was terrifying.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I talked to him on Skype, so I got to see him. And when we did the little intro for the show, he put in the false teeth that he used for doing the ADR.
Really?
And just that was enough. It was just like, this is really creepy.
Yeah.
And still wondering about the connection between Deputy Roy and the Visitor. You know, because, same person playing both parts, but is there actually a story connection between the two?
Well,
it seems pretty likely.
Yeah, you'd have to talk to Neil about that, really. Right?
Oh, that's squeezing water out of a stone. Neil enjoys being mysterious, so anytime we have those crucial questions, he's never going to flat out answer it. He'll respond something even more mysterious and more stuff to figure out.
Yeah, and you know what's also cool about Neil, not only as a director, but as the co-writer and as the guy that you know, comes up with all these ideas, how to market it, how to play it, how to connect with Apple and the app and tell the story in a whole different way than other films have been telling. He's brilliant, and he thinks not from the past to the present. He's always thinking present to the future.
Sure.
And that's an extraordinary thing.
Yeah, that's thinking about that scene in the hospital, and I mean, how much do you, and this is kind of a question I've asked a bunch of times, is, you know, how much do you feel like you knew about the mysteries and the story and exactly where Mike Cole is placed in this? You know, how much does he really know about everything that's going on?
Well, you know, a good actor has to fill in the backstory.
Sure.
And whether it was Neil's intention or somebody else's intention or the director's intention or whatever, Neil directed, of course. For my part, I always figured that Mike had a thing for Catherine.
Sure.
Back when they were teenagers, right?
I could see that.
And that although Jack is his best friend, there was a jealousy thing.
Sure.
And then when Jack and Catherine connected more, I think Mike kind of went bitter.
Hmm.
And then the events that happened in the Maynard house, caused him to, you know, switch off the good and go into the dark. And then I figured why he's so possessed with Melissa to the point of stalking her.
Right.
I think it has to do, and this is just me personally.
Sure. Not, oh, yeah.
I think it has to do with that bitter anger and that connection with Catherine, and that Melissa kind of looks like Catherine.
Sure.
And it's a way to get back at Jack and to let out this anger thing. To me, started to make sense. And whether or not it really connects with how Neil sees it, or anybody else sees it, that's my own personal take on what that backstory was that led to why Mike's behavior is so bizarre and so scary towards Melissa, because Melissa's the daughter of his best friend. There's
right.
got to be something else that's going on there. Right?
Yeah, so. I mean, Mike has history with that family, and thinking about it from a perspective of Mike's own intentions versus, you know, at first I thought Mike was kind of a pawn in this thing and, you know, Jack is away and so he needs Mike to keep an eye out, but then also Mike is pretty creepy on his own. So thinking of his own personal motivations outside of keeping whatever secrets the town is keeping.
Yeah.
It's an interesting way to think about it.
You know, when you play a bad character, you know. And I teach acting at Red Deer College, so I always tell my students about this too. Like Shakespeare's Othello and Iago. If you play Iago as a bad guy, you're doing a disservice to the character and the playwright, because really bad people rarely think of themselves as bad. Right. They think of themselves as being treated unfairly and are looking for whatever kind of poetic justice in their own dark minds they see. And so I don't think that Mike Cole thinks of himself as evil and bad. I think he thinks of himself as being wronged.
I could see that, definitely.
Yeah. And because he's wronged and he wants to get some justice, you know, that's again why he goes after Melissa. But also, I mean, he's at the end, you know, he's possessed.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely seems bitter. You know, Jack has the whole family with Catherine, and Mike, as far as we can see, is by himself and working at the hardware store. And
yeah,
and
bitter and angry and feeling hard done by and all this kind of stuff. And another aspect, and this has changed the topic ever so slightly, but the flesh-eating disease part.
Yeah.
Here's a little trivial thing for me. My brother actually was infected with necrotizing
fasciitis, whatever.
Yeah, fasciitis. And within, oh, I don't know, 24 to 48 hours, he was close to losing his leg.
Oh, wow.
They were able to save him. But that disease, you know, like the scratching in it, and, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, like, half my face is falling off. That right. kind of thing. That just to have that personal connection really helped to bring that to life, too. And also, Zero, I got to say,
sure.
the people that did the makeup, all the crew, not just the cast and the director, but the crew working on Haunting Melissa, everybody's so, you work on some shows where it's a job, you know, and you get, you're paid your money and the crew are there and they're putting in the hours because it's their job. But on Haunting Melissa, it seemed to me everybody from the producers on down to the guy that's, you know, the third production assistant to whatever, were all they felt like they had ownership.
Right.
And they felt like they all were on something that was new, could be a game changer, that was exciting to work on. And so everybody was enthusiastic. We sometimes you'd work 12-hour days or more, and at the end of that, on other shoots, you know, people are exhausted. They just want to go home. Let's get this shot done. But on this one, there seemed to be an excitement, and that energy just carried through everything. You know, it was exciting to work on, I got to say.
Yeah, I would expect that with, you know, a production that's not big budget Hollywood corporate kind of thing, where everybody is personally invested in, you know, making this thing work.
That's right. That's right.
It definitely comes through.
Well, that was another neat thing about Neil, his ability to make everybody feel like they had ownership and that it was not just his stuff or somebody else's and I'm a gun for hire. Mm-hmm. This is part of mine, too, you know, and that really that ability to do that's a rare thing. And maybe I'm praising Neil too much here.
But that's part of what this show is everybody praise Neil.
Yeah.
Do you think, and maybe you know, I don't know, that the necrotizing fasciitis that Mike Cole got, was that goth girl or Karis being protective of Melissa?
That's a good question.
Because you talked about how, you know, Mike seems to be obsessed and kind of attacking at Melissa. And I've always had this feeling like goth girl doesn't really seem to directly do anything with everybody. She just kind of shows up and she's always watching, and the chapter headers have eyes on them, so it felt like she was more keeping an eye on things.
Yeah, and you know, that's I never really thought about that, but that makes a lot of sense. In a way, it's protecting her, because if I didn't get that disease, Who knows what would have happened with poor Melissa?
Yeah.
And that's another thing. Cassia and I working on those scenes. And at one point I went to her and I said, you know, I have to look at you and act towards you like I could eat you raw. Eat you raw. And she said, yeah, I know. And so, you know, as actors, we kind of have to come to a mutual agreement and a respect thing about this. But the characters, though, I think Mike would have gone the distance.
Sure.
Had he not had that restriction. That's a great point about the flesh eating, necrotizing. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he was really going over the deep end. And yeah. Karis definitely, or Goth Girl, put a stop to that.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Also in Haunting Melissa, where Deputy Roy gets the phone call to go talk to Mike Cole, and that's another thing that makes me feel like there's definitely a connection between Deputy Roy and the visitors. How it's like you're just going to send this guy out, and he seems really confident that he's going to go deal with this.
Right, but you know, the other interesting thing about that, too, for all those justifications of, you know, protection and human behavior, the script every time at every turn twists it, turns it, and it's always a surprise, and you think, oh, finally they're safe, or the thing is gone, or
right.
You know, Goth Girl isn't there, and yet boom, and around, and it changes. And it kind of reminds me of when I was a little kid, I was terrified by the Wizard of Oz when the witch would appear, because there was no control.
Yeah.
Dorothy had no control. And just when you thought she was safe or away from the clutches of the evil, wicked witch, boom, there she come. And it terrorized me. And those feelings came back. I know when I was first reading through the script, I'm thinking, oh, my God, they've got that same feeling in me. And it's scary just to read the script.
I can definitely imagine it. It's a really great story, and it's really scary and thrilling without going over the top and being, you know, graphic and gory. And it's just all of those elements come together. In
well,
just
that's
the right
kind
way.
Of a Hitchcock thing too, right? Like Alfred Hitchcock didn't show you a lot of gore in his movies. What he showed you was the psychological thriller aspect. And most of the gore and the scary stuff is actually in your brain.
Right.
So, and we can much more imagine terror than if we actually see it outright all the time. And that's another thing about Haunting Melissa, because it sets up the terror and sets up the terror that you build in your own mind.
Oh, yeah. It's very effective at freaking you out and making it easy for you to put yourself in the story.
Yeah.
And then with Dark Hearts and the new character Emma, who really feels like one of us watching the app and trying to figure it out.
How brilliant, starting her off as a little child, right? Because what's the most innocent thing in the whole wide world is a little child, and yet in that environment it's just it just makes me smile, but I'm not smiling from happiness. I'm smiling from, man, that's effective. That is an effective tool. Yeah.
Very, very effective. The scene in the hospital with the visitor standing over you, and I don't know if it was specifically outlined to you what the visitor was doing to Mike, but maybe what do you think the visitor was there to do at the end? Obviously, well, Mike's, you know, about to flatline, but
Mike's demise was not going to be easy, was not going to be quick, was not going to be, you know, a pleasant demise. And I'm saying demise because who knows?
Yeah.
Death is all relative in Haunting Melissa, but the visitor, the dark man, coming to take me away, ha ha he he. and I suspect that that Mike doesn't just disappear. That there's the beast who needs to be fed needs needs an army, needs tools, needs a ways and means of getting fed, and who knows. But so I, and quite honestly, I don't know. Maybe this Mike Cole died and went to wherever he went to, and that's it. But who knows?
Yeah, it kind of felt like he was like sucking out the soul of Mike Cole, or taking a part of him.
Absolutely. And that idea of, you know, that was part of the torture of Mike Cole's death on that bed, was that the soul was being sucked out. It wasn't just, you know, cut his throat, he's dead.
Right.
There's a suffering that needs, and that's part of an epic journey too. Conversely, if you look at Aristotle's sense of a hero, mm-hmm. a hero needing to go on this epic journey and needs to suffer in order to rise above. Maybe that's happening on the dark side of things as well as on the good side of things.
Sure. There seems to be this other dimension where some people don't, I mean, you die, but then you end up in this really tortured place. I mean, that message through the TV that you're not going to like it here.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's super ominous.
What was really good too on the night that we were shooting that Neil, as a director, and I'm not talking about as a producer and writer, which he's brilliant, but as a director, we did the scene, and he came to me and he said, "You know, Larry, you're like a race car driver, and right now it's kind of like you're driving your car through a residential zone. But what we want to do is put you on the fast track, right? And that's that horror, that's that speed, that's that thrill, but the terror of what you're going through." And I thought, you know, that was a good image to play at, you know, that getting, just letting that go and just putting the pedal to the metal. Because who knows? Who knows what it feels like to get your spirit sucked out of you,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And did you get a chance to, although there's no scenes where you're there, but I like asking everyone because it's a very iconic place, did you ever get to go to the Maynard House?
I never got to go in the Maynard House, although when end of a day comes, sometimes some people are in one location and some people are in another location. So the drivers come and they pick you up and they take you to the next location and so forth and so on. So I remember driving out one time to see the cellar.
Mm.
Thing.
Oh yeah.
And I never went in there, but I was thinking, I don't want to go even
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I can't say I blame you for not going in there.
Yeah, the people that did the locations, the set deck people, They really excelled at finding what I thought image wise was mm-hmm. the right location. And even the Strogue House, I got to tell you, it was creepy being in that place.
Yeah.
So all these locations that are creepy, just being there, and you think, okay, now you amplify that through the magic of film. Very effective.
Oh, hugely. Yeah. I mean, from top to bottom, it's a very effective film from the way it's delivered through apps and by chapters that are released randomly.
Yeah, that random release thing too, brilliant.
Yeah, when I first found out about it, I was like, "This is for me. Like, this is exactly what I would want." And I didn't know I wanted it. It's a genius way to do it. And yeah. I mean, the sound. I just had Scott Kramer on the show, you know, doing all the sound stuff, which also helps you paint the kind of horrifying picture in your head.
Yeah.
You know, because you're hearing things, but you're not seeing them, and you don't know where they're coming from, and it's really great. How did you first, before the audition, how did you first find out about this film? Was it through your agency, or?
Well, I first found out about it in the usual way that I found out about films, is my agent calls me and saying, "There's this project, here's the script breakdown. Is this something that might interest you?" And so I read the description and the script breakdown, and then I said, "Yeah, of course." And so then she submitted me, And then you got to wait and see whether they want to even audition you, right? So a lot of the aspects of the control of the business as an actor, especially in this area, is out of your own hands. You're at the mercy of what you look like, you know, like your photograph and your resume and maybe clips of other things that you've done. Whether or not they're even going to see you for an audition, let alone get a call back, let alone meet with the director, let alone do some chemistry tests or something. So it's a long process. And you know, for every part that an actor auditions for, you can bet your dollars. We know here in Alberta, you know, you audition in Edmonton or Calgary, but they're auditioning in Vancouver. They're auditioning in Toronto. And that's after they've already auditioned in Los Angeles and possibly New York and Chicago, and the list goes on. So for every part, and this is what I tell my students too, you've got to look right. You got to be right. You got to take advantage of the audition when it gets there, because you either have it or you don't. And then there's this thing called luck that's out of your control, right? So that's how I heard about Haunting Melissa, through my agent.
And what did you think about this new technology and this new way that he was going to put film out? How did that strike you when you first found out about that?
Okay, well, it's true confession time here, Zero. I am 63. And I am not as up on high tech as... here's how high tech I am. I tell my students at the beginning of class, you know, you can email me, and you know, email's gone now practically. You can email me, and I promise you, within 10 days, I'll respond. And they're saying, "What? What? I want to connect with you, and I want a response right away." Right? So I said, "Well, yeah, you can do that, or we can do this strange thing called." Face-to-face. You can actually knock on my office door. You can meet face-to-face. So when I heard about all this technical stuff, I wasn't really all that up on it. So I went to my expert, who is my son, whose whole life and his occupation now is with computers and programming and coding and all that kind of stuff. And he said, yeah, this is legit. This is cool. Get involved.
Yeah.
And of course, my students, I hear about things through them, and they're very involved, and they tell me about, how cool this storytelling aspect of filmmaking is and how different it is. Like, you don't go to a theater and sit down and watch the 2 hours, the 120 minutes, you know, and then walk out. You don't get to walk out of Haunting Melissa, right?
Not at all.
Yeah,
you get to have the movie wake you up in the middle of the night. With some creepy sound, and you got to watch more.
And absolutely.
And it's something that you like we're doing right now, you talk about for months and months afterwards. And, you know, I make a blog and I do a podcast all about trying to figure out what's going on in this movie and getting into all the details.
Yeah. So, as a matter of fact, the high-tech thing, this just a quick little story. I don't often get recognized. I've been in lots and lots of films, but... I was at a restaurant, and I was sitting there, and there was a family, two girls and a husband and a wife, and the girls were, I don't know, you know, maybe 10 to, the other one was 13 or so, and the two girls kept looking over at me, and I was sitting at another table by myself, and just minding my own business and everything, and then the father came up and said, excuse me, sir, I just want to make clear to my daughters that you're not some horrible monster guy that they're seeing on their iPhones. And I said, I hate to disappoint you, but I'm just a normal guy. Sorry. So he walks away and sits down, and I, you know, I'm sort of looking out of the corner of my eye, and the daughters are kind of, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so they sit there. And then at the end of my meal, I get up and I walk over to the table and I said, I'm sorry to disappoint you. And I looked at the one girl and I said, just on my way out, I said, dead is supposed to be dead. And her eyes just went into saucers, right? And I kind of winked and walked away, and I don't know what happened after that.
But
that was fun. That was fun.
Well, I put it out on Twitter if anyone had any questions for Mike Cole or for you. And we've actually hit a lot of the stuff. I had a question about whether or not Mike had a crush on Melissa, like Melissa thought.
Well, that's a great question. I think Mike had an obsessive, dark, and I hate to say this, but I think there was a sexual a sexual desire. I don't know. I think it goes beyond a crush.
Sure.
I think a crunch.
Yeah, dead on. Absolutely. I can absolutely see that. And, yeah, I mean, he felt the need to invade her space, literally, and, you know, coming into her house and really, especially because Jack's gone. So,
yeah.
You know, he's like, I can do whatever
and,
I want.
And it goes beyond just him looking after Melissa while Jack's gone, because he hangs outside her house.
Yeah.
He's breathing heavy when he's looking in the windows, you know, and that's, I think if there's a case for a pedophile,
yeah.
Although she's supposed to be 17, but I think yeah. Michael might fit the, unfortunately, personally, I am not.
Yeah.
Just put that out there.
We also have a question. This is also from Brian Kaplan, like that last question was. Mike ever try out the fedora?
Did Mike ever try out for?
Try the fedora. I think he wants to know if you tried putting the hat on.
Oh. No, never tried out the fedora yet.
Yet, yeah.
And I'll just leave it at that. Huh?
Sure. I'm sure you'll take the chance if you get one. and a question I'd like to ask is, did you take anything away from the set? Do you have any props, any little things?
Other than photographs, no. And this is the reason why. I know when I was doing Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood's Academy Award winning, he won for Best Picture and Best Director in 91 or something like that. I was talking to a wardrobe guy, and he was complaining about people that, as he said, go south with like the boots or,
right.
You know, a vest or something like that. And then he says, where that puts us in a difficult position is that if we have to go back in and do reshoots or something, continuity-wise, if we don't have the right the wardrobe pieces or the props that we used in the actual on-the-day stuff, it's harder to do continuity. So people, you know, some actors do that, but he was really discouraging of that. The other way around that, of course, is if you go to the props guys or the wardrobe people or something and ask to buy something. But in this case, in Haunting Melissa, for instance, who knows if and when it's going to stop.
Right.
So I didn't want to take anything personally, but I did get some photographs, some pretty cool photographs, I got to tell you.
Yeah, Neil's been popping out a lot of behind-the-scenes photos here and there.
Yeah.
It's really cool to see how, you know, the way everything looked. Actually, one of the people that's in our little Twitter group that speculates about the story, she got to be on set for that shed scene with Farley and the weird monster thing in the shed. She got to actually be there.
Oh, yeah.
Super jealous.
Cool.
And his last question is, if Mike had a hammer, would he hammer in the evening?
He'd hammer in the morning, he'd hammer in the evening, he'd hammer all the time. He's a hammering kind of guy.
Quite right.
I don't know if I'd want to be in the way of that hammer, though.
No.
Yeah. And, of course, being a hardware guy, you know, Mike knows hammers.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
One of my biggest wonders and things I really hope to see in future Haunting Melissa related things is more of what happened in the Maynard house when they were younger. Do you have any theories about that or things you thought about?
Well, you know, the script does give some hints about places where the beast or minions of the beast emerge. And it's not like it happens just anywhere arbitrarily. I think there's particular places. And something about the Maynard house makes it a particular place where evil can emerge. And, you know, I think we've all experienced at some point or other in our lives being in some environment or some enclosure or something and feeling that things aren't right. I know that personally sometimes I have dreams where I'm halfway awake and halfway asleep and I feel that there's an evil presence. I'm not making this up. This is true. An evil presence in the room and I am frozen. I cannot move. And that sense is overwhelming sometimes. And it doesn't happen to me very often. I'm glad it doesn't.
Yeah. I've had that before as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you feel like a pressure on your chest and you can't move, but you really feel like something's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had a thought about, you know, there being certain places where this whole thing can happen. There's a story I was writing a while ago, I'm still working on, which just has to do with kind of weak spots in one side and the other side. And mm-hmm. the Maynard house definitely seems like that kind of a place. That be mansion where a lot of the stuff in Dark Hearts happens.
Right.
Seems like that kind of place. And it also makes me wonder about, you know, alternate dimensions or also alternate timelines with where things are happening. Because you can never, especially with something that's released in chapters, you're never really sure, was what I'm seeing now, is it the present, is it the past, is it the future, is it even in the same kind of world as everything else?
Well, you know, what makes that effective in that thought, too, is that it's not so far into the supernatural to be unbelievable. For instance, my dad, before he died, had dementia, and he would be in one world, and you'd be looking at him, and then his face would go, you'd change, and within an instant, he would be in another place, in another world, and it was bizarre to experience. And I think what one of the powerful things about Haunting Melissa is that it's not so supernatural that it's, you know, you can write it off.
Sure.
Because there is that edge there that the people do experience, and that people, schizophrenia, what's that all about, you know, and hearing voices and seeing things and then turning around and looking in it and they're not there. Can you imagine how terrorizing that is? And yet that's a condition of the human existence, human being, right? It's not something that we're just made up. So to me, the scariest monsters aren't monsters that are, so Megatron, pom pom pom, but are monsters that we have as neighbors,
right,
in our lives, and that maybe we have within ourselves that monster actually exists. And that's a scary, scary thought to me.
And I mean, that's exactly what, you know, Dark Hearts is kind of all about, is that
taps right into it, doesn't it?
Yeah, that dark side we all have inside of us, and you know, trying to fight that off. I mean, that's clearly part of what drove Catherine completely nuts. And then Melissa starting to go through that thing and fighting back and forth with, you know, am I actually seeing things? Is this real? Or am I just going crazy? Haraway pushing her think that she's just losing her mind and it's all in her head.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Caraway too, Dr. Caraway. Is she actually a psychiatrist who's trying to help, or is she one of the feeding of the beast? And you're never really sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she's very good at delivering the lines in a way where you can't really tell.
Yeah, and I love that ambiguity, on. You know, that you can't really tell, so you're unsure. And that's another thing, the fear of the unknown. right? Taps right into that.
Oh, yeah. And there's so much unknown, and when you know a little bit, it makes you have questions about other things, and you have to go back and forth and try to put the pieces together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is definitely the right way to deliver this kind of film, and a great story to tell. And I tell Neil that all the time, so I'm sure he's tired of hearing about how great it is. Well, Larry, thank you very much for coming on the show. Any final words for the listeners out there?
Yeah, watch Zero, because not only are you very cognizant and knowledgeable about everything, but you've got a cool hairdo, I got to tell you, sir.
It's a little high.
Yeah, it's neat, man.
Every time I wake up, I don't know what it's going to look like. Today, it's all straight up in the air.
Looks great to me.
Thank you very much.
It was a real pleasure talking to you. It was a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you for coming on. It's been great to be able to talk to everybody and get all of your ideas of what it was like being on set and also what you think of the story. So yeah. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, I hope it goes on.
Yes, me too. That's part of why I'm doing this. I'm trying to make it happen. All right, Larry. Well, thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, we'll see you later.
All right, you have a great day.
Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of A Dark Companion. If you're listening to this through iTunes, please rate and review this. 5 stars would be excellent if you feel we deserve that. You can also go to adarkcompanion.com, which is the website for the podcast through Podomatic. You can listen to all the episodes there, read all the descriptions, as well as a PayPal link if you feel the need to donate a little bit to help keep the show going on. And if you want to follow along with our chapter-based episodes, you can go to itwantstogetout.tumblr.com and follow me and the show on Twitter. I am at A Public Witness, and the show is at A Dark Companion, also on Instagram as well. Thank you very much, and have a great day.